It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later in the show, we'll look at new proposed regulations for trains that move hazardous fuels throughout the United States.
First, we're taking a look at a nationwide problem. U.S. jails are, in effect, filling the role of mental health facilities because of the influx of mentally ill inmates. The Associated Press reports that in some jails across the country, more than 20% of the inmates suffer from a mental illness. And it's not just jails. The criminal justice system as a whole is overwhelmed with mental health cases.
John Snook is with us to discuss the problem and some possible solutions. He's Deputy Executive Director of Governmental Affairs for the Treatment Advocacy Center. John, welcome to the show.
Glad to be with you.
So how widespread a concern is this, people with mental illnesses ending up in jail?
I think it's a national problem. Communities across the country are really struggling with how do we best treat those who have a severe mental illness? Because unfortunately, in far too often, we are failing.
And often the treatment or the first point of contact for someone with a mental illness is with law enforcement and the criminal justice system. How did we end up there?
Unfortunately, there have been a number of pieces that have combined to get us into the predicament that we're in today. One of the biggest pieces is the elimination of inpatient psychiatric beds. What started out as a very good idea as a way to deinstitutionalize and ensure that people were able to get treatment in the community really ended up in a position where we just don't have enough psychiatric beds in the community. There's a longstanding federal rule known as the IMD exclusion, which basically says that Medicaid is unable to reimburse for facilities that would exist as an inpatient facility to provide psychiatric care. So what that means in reality is there just aren't enough hospital beds for those who need that sort of crisis care in an inpatient facility.
And getting into the history, as I understand it, there was a move, as you mentioned, to deinstitutionalize, move away from these large psychiatric hospitals, gradually close those down, but replace it with a network of community-based mental health centers. That network never really came about as people had envisioned, did it?
That's exactly right. Unfortunately, we never really invested in a system of community care in a way that we needed to. And that combined with standards that we changed to ensure that people really were only able to get care when they were dangerous to themselves or others meant that those who need something more than voluntary care were really only going to get it when they were either dangerous or placed in a facility, a jail or a prison.
Well, let's walk through that scenario now. Someone becomes a danger to themselves or others. Somebody calls the police. Police, do they have training to deal with people with whose behavior is the result of mental illness?
There are a number of initiatives that have been implemented. The most famous is what's known as CIT, or Crisis Intervention Training. It stemmed out of the Memphis, Tennessee area. After a number of tragedies, the law enforcement officers there recognized that they needed to do something more because they were dealing with so many of these cases. And what that program does is basically takes a number of steps to ensure that law enforcement officers understand what they're dealing with when they're trying to provide care to someone who's seriously mentally ill. And steps like not approaching them in the same manner that they would a normal person that may not have a mental illness, or recognizing that that person may not respond to commands in the same way that they would expect from someone that they would typically deal with. And then they also do a number of steps on the other side of trying to help law enforcement officers not have to take so much of their time dealing with mental health issues. So at the end of the day, what that means is providing systems that allow a law enforcement officer to be able to get that person into a hospital or into a crisis center without having to have them take them to a jail. And Wisconsin has actually taken a number of steps to institute those sort of crisis stabilization locations, mobile crisis response teams, crisis intervention programs. And basically what that allows a police officer to do is to find a person who needs care, get them into that care, and not have to take them to jail. Because what a law enforcement officer would typically have to do is sit with that person for a number of hours in an emergency room, in an inpatient facility, until they got care otherwise. And after a police officer has done that four or five times, they simply aren't going to take that person to the facility because they don't have the time. So that person's going to end up in a jail. So these programs step in and say, we have a better way of doing this, and we're going to get that person care without taking all of your time.
Well, that sounds like a good step, but I can't imagine anyone, a police officer, someone with a mental illness, a social worker, anybody thinks the best system is for the police officer to be the person handling a mental illness issue. The police officers would say, that's not our job, it's not what we're trained for. Are there steps being taken to jump in before it's the police officer having to make this decision, having to take someone to the jail or to a treatment center or something like that?
That's exactly right. And that is the biggest message that we hope to get out there, is that all of the training in the world doesn't make sense when you're having a law enforcement officer have to provide care. That's simply not what they're set up for. That's not what our jails and prisons are designed to do. And if you are in a situation where you're having to train law enforcement officers to provide care, you've failed, even if you give them the best possible training, because that's simply not their job. Wisconsin has taken one of the most important steps, which is to make sure that your standard for when you can provide someone care recognizes the reality of mental illness. In Wisconsin, if you are a person who has a severe mental illness, the state is going to be able to provide you care if, beyond just that standard of, are you dangerous, are you going to hurt someone or hurt yourself, Wisconsin goes farther and says, is your illness causing you to be unable to understand that you need care? And if you are unable to understand that you need care, are you deteriorating in a way that's going to mean that you need care right now? And so it's similar to what is done for other illnesses. It's getting rid of that artificial distinction between a mental illness and a regular illness to say, are you able to understand that you're sick? Are you having hallucinations that make you think that instead of your illness, it's the CIA who's talking to you? If that is happening, Wisconsin is able to step in and say, we're going to provide you care until you get to a point that you're able to make those decisions voluntarily. In far too many situations around the country, when a family member starts to deteriorate in that way, what they're told when they call their local hospital or their local police force is, we can't do anything until they're dangerous, until they hurt you or hurt someone else. So families are basically left to wait and hope that when their loved one hurts someone, it's someone within the family, and they're able to call and get care at that immediate moment. And it's just not a system that makes sense for severe mental illness, or really for any situation.
Under our current system, a lot of times after that contact with law enforcement, a person with mental illness ends up in jail for some period of time while people figure out what to do, while they wait for a court date. They may be in jail again and again. How bad is jail as a setting to temporarily house someone with a mental illness?
It is quite simply the worst possible place for someone with a severe mental illness. In every instance that you can think of, a mental illness is going to make treatment and their stay in a jail or a prison worse. Things like being victimized by other prisoners, being involved in being placed in solitary confinement, increased costs for the facility itself. Basically, every situation that you can think of in a jail or prison is made worse by having a severe mental illness.
We're talking to John Snook of the Treatment Advocacy Center about the number of mental health cases overwhelming all parts of the criminal justice system here in the United States.
And you can join the conversation. Are you a law enforcement officer who's dealing with mental health issues in your community? How are you handling that issue? Or if you're a social worker, what are you seeing in your local jails? Do you know someone with a mental illness who's had to deal with the criminal justice system? What happened? You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email at talk@wpr.org. We're continuing our conversation with John Snook of the Treatment Advocacy Center about the number of mental health cases overwhelming the criminal justice system in the United States.
And you can join the conversation. Are you in law enforcement? Do you have to deal with mental health issues in your community while you're on the job? How do you handle that? If you're a social worker, what do you see going on in your line of work? Or do you know someone with a mental illness who's had to deal with the criminal justice system? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. John, I wanted to talk to you about courts. Now, somebody with a mental illness comes into contact with the police, ends up in court. What kind of options are there for the courts, apart from sending people to prison? Are we seeing new initiatives around the country?
We are. One of the most promising pieces that we're seeing is a program known as Mental Health Courts. And it is pretty self-explanatory, does what it sounds like. It's a specialized court that steps in and diverts folks from the criminal justice system and says, we are going to take into account your mental illness, and we are going to provide you care rather than incarcerating you. And what you find around the country is that these programs save communities money and provide more effective care than you would see that person getting in an actual jail or prison.
So they can they mandate treatment? And is that a concern of imposing maybe a medical treatment on someone?
That is one of the key pieces of mental health courts, is that they can mandate treatment. And what we find is that they provide more effective care than you would see in a jail or prison. And then the reality is there are very specific protections, due process protections, that are built into the process before someone is provided or mandated to participate in treatment. But the reality is that treatment is going to benefit the person. And if they meet those due process standards that they need care, this is a much better outcome than having them be incarcerated for, at the end of the day, what isn't really a crime but a symptom of their illness.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got Marie on the line in Spooner. Marie, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I came onto your program a little bit late, but I did hear something that's very, very familiar to me, and I just want to tell you about an incident. I have an adult son who has a variety of mental illnesses. He's had over 25 inpatient psych hospitalizations, and I've never been able to get him in until, like your guest said, he was a danger to himself or others. He was at this point in a residential home, a treatment center, like a home-based thing. And at one point, he had an altercation. This happened a few months ago. And the person just was angry with him and didn't want to give him his meds. And in anger, he walked out and just slammed the door and said, I'll be back. He wanted to just walk it off. But he didn't realize that he broke the glass in the door that he slammed. And so instead of calling a crisis worker or his case manager, they called the police. And the police found him, tracked him down, handcuffed him, took him for fingerprinting, and he's never been in trouble with the law before. And it was just handled so poorly. And I talked with his attorney and just said, you know, this isn't a crime. This isn't about a person who's done something against the state or, you know, it's just he didn't know what else to do. He actually left and slammed the door to walk to his case manager's office for help. And they just didn't care. And the attorney said to me, well, I understand, but, you know, we just have to keep with what he was charged with. And so now he has a record with disorderly conduct or whatever it is.
Marie, thanks a lot for the call. I wanted to get John in on this. Not, I think, an uncommon story, John. Does that kind of crisis intervention training you were talking with for police help prevent unnecessary escalation?
I think that's one of the key aspects of those sort of programs is being able to step in the middle and help someone who may be having psychotic symptoms or maybe escalating, treating them in a different way than you would typically train a police officer to respond to that person. And that, we find, is very effective for dealing with those sort of situations that all too often end up in the sort of tragedies you see on the front page.
But John, I wonder, I mean, even a trained a police officer who's gone through this kind of crisis training, when they walk into a situation, they don't necessarily know the mental health history of the person they're dealing with. All they've got is what they're observing. How do you overcome that?
And that is the hardest piece of this. And the reality is that all the mental health training in the world is not going to address those sort of situations where a law enforcement officer has to make a split-second decision and the person may be threatening them or threatening someone else. And the key really is making sure that we don't let people deteriorate to the point that they may be dangerous to themselves or dangerous to someone else. And unfortunately, in many states, the laws just haven't kept up with our medical knowledge. And what we find now, I think, makes a lot of sense, but it's a little bit of a delay in the actual laws. So what happens for a lot of people who have a severe mental illness is that the illness impacts their ability to understand that they're sick. And so what happens is rather than being able to understand that they need care, the concern is, well, the CIA is after me or someone is poisoning my food. And no matter how many times you try to reason with that person, because it's their brain that's being impacted by the illness, they're never going to be able to understand that. It's a similar problem you see in someone who's had a stroke. And so for those folks, no amount of voluntary care is ever going to be enough because they don't think that they're ill. And so the state needs to have the ability to step in, provide care to that person until they are able to make a voluntary decision. And in far too many states across the country, what happens is that person is left to deteriorate again until they're a danger. And that's when law enforcement has to step in. And in those situations, you hope that they've been trained with crisis intervention training and these other steps. But the reality is it's the worst possible situation for a law enforcement officer to step into. And all the training in the world is just going to make a bad situation a little better. But it's not the situation we want to have to put law enforcement officers in.
Marie, good luck to you and your son. We'll go now to Josh in Rice Lake. Josh, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. The story you're talking about, it sounds a lot like my brother-in-law. For years, he was in and out of the court system. And then in Barron County, he ended up getting really lucky. He ended up with a mental health caseworker where he was mandated to go get his shots to control his mental illness. And since he had the caseworker, things have really started to improve for him. When he has episodes, the family contacts the caseworker instead of the police, and they can bring him in and talk to him, and they can make a decision whether he gets hospitalized again or not. I can't say enough for the benefit of the caseworkers, the mental health caseworkers, using them instead of law enforcement. And I'll take the comments off there.
Josh, thank you so much for bringing that up. John, I was wondering about that. So many people, the first call sometimes is to the police. How important is it, at least in a non-violent episode situation, is it to have someone else to be that first call a family makes?
That can be very helpful. The National Alliance for Mental Illness, if there's a crisis intervention team in your city or in your county, and those sort of mental health assessment units can all be very helpful. I think, obviously, if you're worried about the situation, it does make sense to call law enforcement in. Hopefully, they will be partnering with those groups and can bring someone along from either the National Alliance for Mental Illness or from some of the crisis diversion teams. But at the end of the day, Wisconsin is in a really good situation. There are a number of these sort of alternatives and options for both mental health professionals and law enforcement to get people care that they need. So you are in a much better position than in a lot of states around the country.
And briefly, are these ideas catching on in those other states?
They are. I was actually just in Virginia testifying there about some of the changes that they are looking to, and one of the examples that I provided was Wisconsin standard. And Virginia has for many, many years been one of those states that relied on solely, is someone in imminent danger? They've moved beyond that recently since the Virginia Tech tragedy, but there's a recognition that they need to do more. And one of the places they're looking to is Wisconsin, because Wisconsin has taken a much more medically focused situation, much more medically focused analysis of how to treat mental illness.
John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's John Snook. He's Deputy Executive Director of Government Affairs for the Treatment Advocacy Center.